folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay, I believe your weather accidentally ended up at my house.
Well, the weather we were supposed to get?
If you can come get that, that'd be appreciated.
Now we got some too today, but like you, I guess.
This has been ridiculous. I literally spent a couple days out running the thing from the storm. I did a little run around early in the week, and it was just like the entire time headed back east was just ridiculous. And then snow and ice and everything that's not nice, one might say.
You got like 6 inches or something?
Yeah, the problem is that you're not prepared for it down here. The roads are clear now, but the first couple days, it's not freaking... There's more than 7 people here. Most people in the North Woods and up north don't realize. It's pretty populous down here because we're not crazy and don't want to live in the frozen tundra. And just trying to keep up with roads and side streets gets messy. And then you got like Metro Nashville, which is it could rain and it's bad. So it's craziness. Oh, do you have any ice? I heard the ice ain't that bad.
Ice is real good.
What's going on there? People getting out?
Yeah. Mostly panfish stories is what I've been hearing last week at work.
Panfish stories with
people
Jay.
Been doing with that. A lot of people like to do that, especially when it's decent out, you know, where it's not, you know, where it's 20 or above. And we had a lot of weather like that this week. So, yeah. Good ice conditions. That's cool, they're driving trucks on lakes. So.
Right. You said that. Somebody had sent something to Jody Michael that was like there was some significant ice. I know we talked about last week, but significant in comparison to other years, which is the neighbor Steve and the snowmobile squad. They're praying for snow. Do you guys have any? Like, is there anything substantial for the snow? Because a lot of people go up there, run up from Chicagoland area, go up there, drink some beers, and run your snow machine.
It's a huge machine in the winter around Vilas and Oneida counties. So last year the trails never opened because of lack of snow, and this year they're still not open. But we did get about 4 inches last night, so added to the 1 or 2 that we already had. I don't know if it's enough, but it's also probably not too much to ruin the ice. And when I say ruin the ice, that generally you get any kind of amount of snow on ice, and once you start fishing on it, slush occurs, and the water comes up, and it's, you know, difficult to travel on and all that.
sounds exciting.
Haven't had to deal with that.
No, thank you. No, I'm glad I don't have to deal with that at all. It's been sub-freezing enough. I have seen edge ice, Jay. You would think it was the ice age. I couldn't believe it. My koi pond froze solid. That was exciting. You know, talk about first world problems.
You know, it's going to rebound quickly, and you'll be back on the water probably tomorrow day, right?
I'm up and at 'em, baby. Rocking and rolling. No, actually catching fish. I love it. That's one thing for you southern guys. It sucks blue blazes when it's sub-freezing out. But any kind of pressure you can put on these fish as far as, change is coming, they feed bag it up. You know, when you really have those hard drops in the winter, that really kicks things up. You know, the bait fish respond accordingly. Everything kind of goes nutty. The best thing I find when it's snowing, and I love fishing in the snow, snowy means cloudy, you know. And it's usually, when you look at snowstorms, they have that really low hanging deal to them, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Where versus like thunder fronts and stuff like, or thunderstorms in the summer, you know, you just look, those are snowy looking clouds. Oh, it's killer. You're just freezing to death. That's it. Chip a little ice away from the reel. We've talked about that. And something, you know, mentioned it in the past and talked about, you know, WD-40 and all this stuff. I actually switched over, you know, Reel Magic, Jay?
Yeah, sure.
The cans of Reel Magic just work just as well. I had a can in the boat. I ran out of the WD, and the Reel Magic gets it done as well. You know, it's just dry your hands off. There's nothing worse than fun. I've done it. You like spray that crap on the reel, and then 5 seconds later you get a strike, and it's like cue the Benny Hill music. You know, just got to watch out for that. But it's interesting.
I mean, you got to take care of your equipment. Sub-freezing and moisture on your equipment just did not equal pleasant day on the water. Pleasant day. You know what I mean?
Got to do what you got to do. I've actually, we just a few days ago, I sent you some video, sent some Jay some cool stuff on Magnus. You'll hear more about that in the coming weeks. And if you're not, get your butt signed up. You're going to want it. But been out filming and doing a lot of trolling, a lot of covering water, and Jay's seen some of that footage of just icy, frozen stuff. So in the South right now, the bite is really good. Like I said, you just got to get out there on those days that suck. Bundle up, wear your fish monkey gloves. Wear your gloves. I think I sent Jay the thing. Finally found gloves. I've said it. I'm going to say it again. If you're still fishing or you're going to fish early season, those freaking fish monkey Sherpa gloves.
Yep.
That's all I'm wearing. Fish monkey ain't called. Is fish monkey, is that like his first and last name of the people, or is that just a brand, Jay? Do you know? Is that?
Mr. Monkey? You know, if you called up, is Mr. Monkey there?
Is he available? No, this is his secretary, Janet.
Fish took off for the day.
Fish. It's like a law firm, fish and monkey. That's even better. But it's family names. No, I don't even, I guess the, I'm being silly, but that company, don't know anybody over there, picked them up from the shop. And I was like, okay, I'll give them a go, man.
Yeah, they're good, aren't they?
They still
have dexterity with your fingers and, you know, they're heavy enough gloves, but they still have some dexterity there too.
Yeah, enough to play around and you're not going to. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to use your phone. Yeah, you got to take them off, right? Have you noticed that every glove now, especially if I got the phone finger, they kind of work, you know. But, you know, if you want to use your phone or you got to do something stupid. But I'm able to cast in them. That's the biggest thing. You know, it's just like, okay, can I thumb the reel? Can I do everything I need to do without this just being a mess? And I've been there, done that on every glove. So those are worth it. But, you know, right now, if you're still on the water, you're the frozen chosen like myself, man, big rubber, trolling baits, that seems to be the thing. But after last week, we kind of went through all the baits. Got a lot of people going, hey, they appreciated the breakdown, a lot of opinion last week on what we like. But everybody, either you're fishing or you're gearing up or you're getting new gear, you're thinking about, you know, the 2025 season and what do you need for success, all that stuff. First and foremost, we're going to talk about all the terminal gear, you know, all the stuff that gets overlooked. I love baits. Everybody loves baits, but we need to go through, because there's so many people ask, I'm going to go through kind of, you know, your nets, your rods, your basics, your tools, kind of the consensus on that a little bit. But everybody loves reels. It's like baits and reels. Everybody, you know, everyone forgets everything else, but reels are the biggie. And there hasn't been in much development in reels until lately. You know, I can't think, Jay, did any new reels come out last year? It was like Ten Squall. Yeah. Well, it looks like the fine folks at Shimano. Is that Shimano? How do you pronounce that?
Shimano.
The fine folks at Shimano have introduced the Shranks 300B. Tranks. My people
call it. Just came out Friday.
In my language, you pronounce that Shranks. The Tranks 300B. You did a little video clip with Miles there at Shimano. Jay, you've had this. I'm only looking at pictures. You're living in the future versus everybody else. You've had it in your hands. What's going on with this thing?
Yeah, it's really the same reel more or less as last year. You know, it's got a low gear and it's got a high gear option.
Right.
It's got, you know, two in right hand, two in left hand. The price is the same, but they changed the frame. Has this core solid Hagane one piece frame.
A what?
So they call it Hagane.
Hagane. You're just making words up.
Well, they might be making words up, but it's a rigid frame. Well, that's a term of their manufacturing process.
Core solid and Hagane. I'm reading with it. Well, boys, learned a new word. Anyway, so it's got a Hagane frame. Continue.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that's into, you know, high quality reels, you need a one piece solid frame, so there's no flexing and it holds all the components in place. It just ensures smooth running and longevity. So that's what they changed on that, and they've got a new SVS tuning system with the braking. So that's got on-the-fly adjustments with an external dial, and it's real easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
You can adjust it, and you can fine-tune it internally. The cover pops on and off in seconds. It's a solid, cool-looking reel, light. You know, specs are basically exactly the same, the weight and everything. It's super light, like the Trinx 300 A's, but this thing just came out. It just made some improvements and adjustments on that reel. So that is the one new, really cool reel. And a lot of people think 300s might be a little small for musky fishing, but
no, not at all.
Not at all. If anything, you'll be able to palm the reel. If you don't have huge hands, it might be for you. You can get plenty of 80 pounds super line on there to work mm-hmm. with. So
okay, I did
highly recommended.
I did some Google.
Yeah,
you know that. I say Google. What's that? Do you have an Alexa in your home, Jay? Do you let them spy on you? Yeah,
you're searching. Okay.
I'm searching. I did the Google. And it says, Hagane means steel in Japanese. However, the Trinx frame, Hagane, it's Japanese, Jay. I feel very, very worldly right now. It's a highly rigid metals. Body is made of highly rigid metals such as aluminum and magnesium. So they've got an alloy they've done here, a little thingy doodle here to increase the rigidity of the reel, and it says to reduce flex and warping, which I mean that's one thing I've seen, like reel seats bend. I'm wondering if it is that primarily in the reel seat, or is that the entire, or like on the side plates of the reel, Jay, are the side plates metal, or are they plastic, or like that, like a hard plastic, like the Trinx? What's going on? Is that just the frame is metallic now?
It's just the frame is metal. Yeah, the side plate is some kind of, right.
Domo Arigato. Hagane. No, cool. No, that's interesting. So it's that aluminum magnesium. So it weighs, 11 ounces in total. Do you know what the old Trinx 300 weighed?
I believe they're exactly the same. There's no weight change.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha. Well, I'm just peeking here. Hagane. Okay. Same overall weight. They've just strengthened it. And it's got the one thing I thought was interesting, again, deferring to you because you've seen her in person. This adjustment on the side, right? I'm looking at it. You've got kind of like the dialing in adjustment. Is there like a second, did the entire side plate turn there, or is it just that little black clicker on the inside of the reel?
The side plate, all you do is you turn that counterclockwise, okay, a half rotation, and it comes off just like that. So, and there's a close switch on the bottom. So, and you know, you got those weights internally, you can pop
in. I'm talking about the other side.
The handle side?
Not handle side. Hold on. I am an idiot because handle side, I'm not going to pop off. My apologies. What I was asking about is this adjustment they've added to the side of the reel. Do you have a picture pulled up by chance? Maybe I'm crazy. I'm trying to explain this because I'm sure somebody else is going to see it. If you look at the side of this reel, there's like this different colored circular disc around the side, right? Is that mm-hmm. mobile, or is that just decorative?
No, that's decorative.
Okay.
That locks in. It's the black portion, if you're looking at that picture.
Right. I didn't know black dial moved, yeah.
And it's nice because it's not something that's going to get bumped
accidentally changed
on you. Yeah, so it's protected by that side plate, which is a little bit higher than the actual dial. So
sweet.
Pretty smart. Yeah. Pretty slick.
Japanese. You can make... micro adjustment. I dig it, man. And that's one thing, like you said, so many people, well, they think they need a 500 size reel or a gigantic reel. I mean,
until they pick one up.
Until
right.
they pick one up. And how much line do you really need? Not much. That is the one thing that people do. I mean, muskies don't run that far. If you're seeing your backing, you're in trouble. But yeah, 300 size. It's cool that they changed that. Are they going to keep the 400 the same, or are they going to do the same thing? Do you have any indication?
400s are the same for now. I don't know what the future holds on that. If they're going to, you know, incorporate these changes, you know, within the year or not.
Yeah.
Right now they're not going to. So, yep.
Well, I dig it. That's cool. Anyway, on to, since we're on the reels anyway, everybody's asking, so we're telling, we might as well go with just reels. Because the argument is this, and I love my Daiwas. I've fished Daiwas, I've fished Abus, I've fished this. Kind of on the same tip, Jay, we were gabbing last week. Gun to the head, right? You got to pick one reel. What's the one for you where you're like, of all the musky reels, not spinning, not just what's your overall? You're telling a guy, hey, you've done it in the store. He walks in, hey, I need a reel, and we need one reel. What is it?
Trinx 400, high gear.
Yeah. Ty?
Pardon me?
I you said high. I would, yeah, that's where I'm at. I don't know if I would go the high. The high is what? Is the high 7.3 or is it? It's 5.8.
It's 40 inches. Yeah.
40 inches a turn.
40 inches per turn, which is 7.6.
Yeah. I mean, I have the 5.8, which I like for slow rolling. I have them both. Yeah, that's probably the one. That's probably the.
Well, it's just what I like. I mean, I've got a Prorex Daiwa, and it's not my backup. It's like, when I go out fishing, I generally bring two setups.
Right.
Two 9-foot heavy Musky Shock shield rods, telescoping, and I got the Daiwa on one, and I got the Trinx on the other. So I kind of have a 1-2 punch, and I'm not constantly opening and closing the snap on my leader. You know, I got the two primary lures I'm going to be using, and I kind of go from there. That's kind of I've been using. That's what I went with all season. I was really, really happy with it. So I love both reels.
Yeah, like I said, if you got to just choose the one, I mean, if you gun to the head, I'm the same way. I've been fishing my Daiwas a bunch, but gun to the head, Trinx. I mean, I would debate, just depends on what you're doing with it. But I guess for the overall optimum diversity of presentations, the 7.6, you know, just for Krakens, for Bulldogs, for heck, even diving rise baits, the pickup, you know what I'm saying? You need a little quicker pickup. So if you're going for it, I price point too. I think one thing too, because I'm leaning the Shimano, little bit of a price point thing, in my opinion, you know, just as an Apple's app, it's, you got different features on the Daiwa, but apples to apples, you know, it's a 400 size reel, you know, at the price point of the Shimano versus the Daiwa is going to be, I think you're going to get your bang for the buck. And it's kind of what is it? 319. I'm looking right now, 319 for Trinx. 329. Yeah, I mean, it's not that much. Never mind. Wasn't it a bigger price spread in the past? Are those about the same?
In the last 2 years, both of those real brands went up a little bit.
A little bit,
you know,
yeah.
Like 10, 20 bucks, man, or something over the last couple of years. But overall, they really haven't changed, you know.
Hold on, let me ask you this. The Corrados, those were a big time reel for a hot minute, right when Super Reels came out, and they've got this Corrado. What size is that? It's a 200. Did they ever make a 300 Corrado, Jay?
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. There it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's also a killer.
Yeah. I mean, Trinx are just walking all over Corrados, though. They just are.
That was before Trinx. Correct me if I'm wrong. There was a green sparkle Corrado.
Yep. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Killers. Killer reels. And that's another really good option there. If you're looking in that 300, that's actually, you know, something I need to add to the boat here, to be honest with you. Those 300 Corrados. 219, 300 size, bulletproof. What's the gear ratio on these? Okay, so I got a 4.7 and a 6.6. That is a heck of an option there. That's a sleeper. I haven't thought about it. I just saw the one Corrado was flipping by. That's another one to think about, really. Because like I said, anytime with people asking what's the constant question, what's the best reel? What's the best reel? Blah, 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 blah. You know, it's a matter of opinion. It's been said before, and it should be said again. You know, a Trinx 500 or a Daiwa Alexa 500 is not right for everybody. You know, that thing's the size of a small toaster with a handle on it. They're big. I mean, if you've not held one of those in your hands, Whereas, you know, like Jay said, big hands, you know, 400s are comfortable for palming and it's not going to be awkward. But that 300, I think, for that's kind of a good, safe size all the way around. I mean, especially if you're doing multi-species or you're not hucking big stuff, but that Corrado is a sleeper. But anyway, getting off of reels here. Something you got to have beyond a shadow of a doubt when it comes to muskies is a net. And this is another one we get popped with here a lot. So just to hit it, everybody's got their preference in net. Here's the deal. I don't think there's a bad net. I think there are better nets. I don't think there's a bad net. So if you have whatever net, as long as it's a musky net, because I'm not comparing something you picked up at the Walmart, right? What makes a musky net? Deep bag, right? And a wide open area, wide yoke, whatever. The measurements across the net. So you want a deep enough bag to contend with a big fish, and you want the net wide enough physically to be able to easily net fish, right?
Yeah, at least 30 inches wide, right? In a general rule of thumb, that's what I'd go with. A lot of them are about 34. That's a kind of an industry standard in a frame size for a net for musky fishing. Yeah,
I can tell you flat out what I use, and this has worked for me. This is my favorite. I've tried them all. Is the Power Catch. Frable Power Catch, big game. It's the 8425 model, right? Dilly-dally with this one, tried that one, done them all. That is the one that I use on the daily. That's my go-to. No problems with that net. It's a heavy mesh. One thing, when people are looking at nets, let's say you got an old net, you want to get rid of it, or you're looking for a new net or whatever. Something that I think is detrimental on safe release and the health and safety of muskies is too fine of a mesh. And it doesn't get talked about enough, right? Okay. When you get a net bag, there's two schools of thought, right? A highly rubbered, tight weave is going to prevent fin tearing and things of that nature when we're landing a fish, right? Because I'll tell you, most of the damage to muskies happens in the net. It's just a fact, right? You hooked them in the face, that's bad enough. And now when they get in the net and they start rolling around, that's the one time they have leverage. And something that goes overlooked often, I'm going to a little side car here. You'll see people go, my bait tore up, or the split ring bent, or the hook was bent. I got him, but most of the damage to your baits happens as well in the net. There's not enough, you know, if your rod is flexing, it is a buffer to the fish, right? So the force is flexing the rod, and that is the weakest point in your signal chain, right? So the rod flex is there for a reason. And that's a buffer. It's a snubber. It's absorbing that force, that energy. Well, muskie's thrashing on the rod. He's not bending the split ring or tearing up the hook or anything else. When he gets in the net and the net is stationary, now the hook or the split ring or whatever is in the net, now he can really start tearing the bait up. Secondly, back to the original point, is he can start tearing himself up. That's one of the biggest things, and a big no-no, having the right net, obviously size, right? So the wider the net, the more room for that fish to not do that. But back to the mesh, and it's a constant debate. I personally feel like the tighter weaved mesh that is claimed, okay, this is going to tear less fins up or cause less damage, takes way longer to unhook fish out of. And when they get rolled up in it, it's a nightmare. The finer the mesh, the smaller the gap in the weave of that net. They can roll up into it, and you can't even see the hook at times, right? Especially little fish. Little fish get in there, and they spin around, and it's like, oh, crap, you know?
Yeah.
I like the Power Catch. It's a wider gap in the mesh, and it's a bigger, for lack of the netting material, the actual rope or whatever you want to do, what do you call the components of a net, the cordage they use, right, to make the net is thicker, right? So
it is,
right. I tend to get less hooks stuck in that, because what happens, muskie gets in net, Now, and if you think about it, throw a hook. Just do this to make you, it's a fun game to play with the family. Let's throw a musky bait in the net and shake the net and see what happens. No fish needed. It's going to get tangled in there. It always does. Now we got a living creature in there. So the wider cordage, the wider gaps in the net allows me to quickly address and get the fish out. Obviously, most of the time I'm cutting the hooks to just not even deal with this. I can't tell you the amount of times there'll be a hook, Jay, that's not even hooked in a muskie that I just cut the shank on, right? The hook shank, I've cut it, and it's just in the net just to get it out of the freaking way, right? Mm-hmm. One less thing, because now we have 9 points of treble hooks, plus the fish's mandible. And I think what really happens is muskies will roll up. Now they've got the baits all constricted. You know, it's rolled up like a burrito. We got a musky burrito in this thing. And now he's heads above water, and what do we do? So to prevent that, I go with the larger mesh. Now that same bigger, wider mesh, Clam offers it on their nets, and they've changed. Both of these have changed, I think, since the last time I used a Clam, Jay. They're both teardropped in style now, correct?
Yeah. They went away from the round frame size.
Right.
Or shape.
Now the round frame is an interesting thing they did there, because geometrically it's stronger, right? So round is whatever. Not to crawl down the rabbit hole on that, but it was, you know, I don't think none of them have any damage issues, but they've got the more traditional teardrop. That's another wide mesh. That's kind of the preference. I'd say that with the Clam, though, and just making sure, okay, rubber-coated polypropylene net. So the one thing I'd say about the Clam net is they do coat the actual webbing of the net. The net itself is coated in a rubber agent, but with that comes weight, right? So personal preference, I try to avoid the rubber-coated nets for the standard net for ease of netting fish from a weight perspective. And I was going to ask you, Jay, most of the time you're fishing solo, how much does that change the netting material for you? Say, you know, like in your small rig or something like that, or you go more Stowmaster, you go in like if you're fishing, you know, I'm guiding, so it's easy. I'm not reeling the thing in, I'm netting the thing. So the bigger weave and the weight's not an issue. What's your head case or what's your thoughts on net?
That's the discussion this day and age on nets. It's gone away from, it used to be like, oh, you know, I don't like this frame and mm-hmm. I love this frame. Does this frame come with this kind of bag? Does right. it come with a wider frame? They're all good. You know, if it's a Clam or if it's a Stowmaster it's like Ranger. The real discussion we've had, or if it's a Frable, the frames don't fail. Okay. No. I mean, you could run them over with your truck. They're probably going to be fine.
I've done that.
The engaging are all different. They all have a different way of, because most people store deploying, their net in their boat. Yeah, deploying the handle. Generally, you just, whether it's this model, A, B, or C, you just pull it out, click, it's engaged. It's that simple. Right. So
handle pulls
that's
out.
That's not
wacky,
the discussion. It's all about the bags these days.
Right.
And, obviously there's pros and cons going with a light bag. Good example would be the Frable Conservation net. You know, that's got a light bag, and some of the Rangers and some of the Stowmasters have a pretty light bag.
Yeah.
Less friction in the water. They're really quick. You can make quick moves and probably maybe even lose less fish because you're able to stab that net exactly where it needs to go when you do have a wild muskie at both side. But again, you asked about solo. It's just like, I'm kind of in the middle of the road. It's just like, I've got an older frame that I've got kind of a middle of the road, I guess, bag mm-hmm. on there. It's not as heavy as the big game Frable,
right,
which I like. I think that's probably the best made bag out there.
No, it's not going to tear it up. Yeah.
It's super strong, and the depth and everything and rigidity of the sides and everything is great.
Mm-hmm.
And there's enough opening on there where they actually maneuver pretty good underwater. You know, I think it's an excellent choice, but anyway, the bag I'm using is kind of in between that and a light bag. And there's a lot of light bags in the market. And if you ever are hesitant on picking out a net, call and ask, because, you know, me and the staff will have opinions for you on what might be too light a bag on a stock net. You know, if you're buying one, you know.
Yeah, you can always, like you're saying, you can put it, it's interchangeable, or you could buy the big clam net and then put a replacement, you know, change the bag though. But, you know, it's that question of durability and weight, you know, again, personal preference is always denoted by physicality and intended use, you know, and that's a lot of it. 'Cause like with the lighter mesh comes, you know, the responsibility of inspection. If you actually made a YouTube short of it before. My buddy Tim, he had the biggest muskie he'd ever caught in the net. It blew out the side of one. It wasn't that the mesh was bad. He had just used it for too long, hadn't paid attention, and it was enough for a fish to rip out the side of one of those really thin, lightweight nets.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're fishing by yourself most of the time, hey, that's a win, you know? So you have to figure out what is your intended usage. What is the, you know, if you're a guy like me where I don't want to, the last thing I want to do in the driveway before I have to go back on the boat is full with a net, Jay. I don't want to. I just don't. I want to buy a net and I want to not have to worry about it. So
yeah,
that's why the power catch works for me, right? All right. The only thing, do you want to do with my nets? I usually will take them when I get them new and put them in the dryer. I will take them off the frame and run them in the dryer and heat them up, and it makes them really loosey-goosey, by the way.
Yeah, soften them up. Yeah, sure.
Soften it up. Because when you first get a net, they're always really rigid. So if you want to make your wife mad, do that. Get the net wet, soak it in your tub, then put it in there. It'll flow like silk.
Make sure she's not around when you
make
do
sure,
that.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then you're fine.
They're fine. Yeah. But I find that that works for me. But if you're a guy where it's like, hey, you've got your one Canada trip, or you're not fishing a ton, and it's you and your buddy who sucks on the net, or it's, you know, you're a solo angler and you're willing to replace that with moderate regularity, because the more fish you catch, the more times you need to inspect and replace that. That's the one downside, but the benefit is reduces the physicality, it reduces the drag in the water. So that would be the thought process there, right?
Another wear and tear on bags is sunlight, you know.
Yeah,
if you live in a climate like you do, and that thing's, even though you don't park your boat in the sun, you know, when you're not using
it, when I'm not people using that's a problem. Yeah,
just getting, you know, when baked. It's out there, yeah, just getting baked every day, it's just like it will deteriorate. You know, yeah. I don't know if you can get a season or two out of it without substantial deterioration, but it could happen.
Oh, yeah, I've had them where you say that, and this is not the juiciest topic, but I've said you talk. It's the last thing you want to fail. I have seen nets, or I've had nets personally where I've left them out in boats before you had a place to park them, and. Okay, even the heaviest webbing starts wearing down. It just deteriorates. So that's something to take care of your net bag, Jay.
Take care of that bag.
Which is another thing. Just in a side topic, just for 2 seconds, in that same wheelhouse. We're talking about baits breaking. Dude, one thing, you've seen a million of these, is leaving baits on the deck of your boat in the summer, and guess what happens? The sides of them blow up like they've got a tumor.
Yeah, ABS plastic baits are notorious for that. They can get damaged pretty easily
in
sunlight.
Put them in the shade, boys. Put them in the shade. Yep. If you ever have a bait that's like, wow, it's because it got too hot, they will actually roast. So don't leave your plastic baits. Don't leave any baits out in the direct sun. But I think nets a lot of times take that abuse. But, you know, the same token, things that you gotta have. We can't go out there without a net. We can't go out there without the tools. I think this one is easy, but just get it out of the way. You gotta have hook cutters, and the freaking Nip-X are hands down the best. There's
the bomb.
That's it.
Hands down.
Don't. I think one of those, again, if we're going you know, you talk about nets and you got to think about conservation for a second, for sure. But that's the same thing. I think the tool that has allowed me to do the least amount of damage to muskies has been the Nip-X, because with one hand, you know, I can cut the shank of pretty much most musky hooks, like the thick part.
100% true, and that's critical.
Are all of them spring-loaded now?
No, you get your choice.
You get your
spring-loaded or just regular.
I'm just looking.
Spring-loaded's nice when you're operating with one hand.
Spring-loaded.
Yep,
that's it. I mean, I'm telling you, I've not seen a better pair of hook cutters yet. I've not seen a pair where I went, okay, that'll even in a one-for-one comparison.
It's a lifetime tool.
Yeah.
And as long as you don't drop it overboard, it's a lifetime tool. I mean, ask anybody that's ever owned one.
I know some lifetime tools. Yeah, that's one thing too. I'll say this: $70 is what there are. Both sets, same price. If you got this, okay. The guys that have these know how freaking good they are. Yeah, it's pricey for a tool. Best thing you can do with these dudes, right? Is I've done it in the past. Is literally like something as simple as a tie. Like I've taped ropes to them with floats and things like that, because you're going to have them hanging over in the net, or if they fall overboard, just devise you a cheap redneck bush fix, something to put a floaty on there, right? And you won't lose them overboard, because there's nothing worse. I have dropped $70 bolt cutters overboard and not recovered them. So, but like you said, they did, and again, I'm not shilling for that. I think these are made in like Germany or something. Anyway, I'm not shilling for them.
It's German heavy metal.
German heavy metal, but
they're the best.
The best. The one thing I say about it, they don't rust. Like I have one pair that's older than sin that I still have around, and once a year I'll hit them with the WD, and they're running like great. Something that always comes up too, and the same ilk, is the split ring pliers. And again, I think it's a hands down. I don't think it's even a question on whether Zeron. All right.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't even think there's a question.
The old blue handled ones.
Old blue, they call him.
He was Can't beat it with a stick.
Legend around the fish camp, old blue. No, that's, dude, forget about it. I mean, I've lost those a million times. That's another thing. Why do these not have floating handles? Somebody, one of these companies they probably because they sell more because they sink. Somebody ought to.
God, I love that thing.
I know. Better go. You got to buy another one. Somebody make a floating handle for these things, right? The amount of split ring pliers I've lost overboard, right? Now, the same thing, I'm just kind of going through the tools you got to have. You got to have long nose pliers. There's a couple ways you can go here. Jay, I don't own one. I've played with them. What's the deal though with the Grabbit? Because it's not a pair of pliers, but you know, you got hook extractors. I know there's a lot of people that are just nutty about these Grabbits. What's the deal with that thing?
Yeah, the popularity on the Grabbit in the last few years has been off the charts, just like weird, crazy. Unfortunately, the price went up. He's struggling to get them made.
Yeah, he hand makes them, or a family makes them, right?
Yeah, something like that.
We got them in stock. Yeah.
We bought a ton of them a couple times a year. So, yeah, they last basically forever. They're metal. It's just a great tool.
Well, how does it work?
And it's got a spring-loaded handle, and it's got like a 20, 24-inch long shaft. And at the end of that, all you do is you grab any part of the hook you can reach, clamp down on it, and then it's secure. It's not coming off. So you can deeply hook fish, thrashing fish, pesky pike. I mean, it's an invaluable tool.
Yeah, I kind of go old school with a pair of needle nose, like a Moron. I've been hooked plenty of times here, and just, you know.
How many times you got a long needle nose and you're in there and it slips when you're trying to get, you know, when you're trying to torque that hook out.
Yeah, I've just not played with one. I've picked them up at the shop, you know, and fooled around with them because I kind of air for, we just had, I think they're Musky Shop branded, like just, those aren't the long ones. Yeah, those are the 11s. Well,
the pliers?
Yeah, just simple. I mean,
all you need for a basic plier is just don't go with a short one. Go with something long. Yeah, those are 11 inches.
You don't need that reach. Yeah, you need some reach, but you don't want to go. Like I said, you know, you got some size. They used to make some angle pliers, all this stuff. I think, like I said, most people are going with those Grabbits now. Not my cup of tea. Maybe it should be. And like I said, the last thing is this, to kind of answer the bunch of questions people ask about these terminal as far as the tools. So you got, okay, we got a net, we got bowl cutters, we got some hook extractor, whether it be a Grabbit or just a pair of long nose pliers. You said deep hook fish and jaw spreaders, right? That's one thing that most people don't actually have laying on the boat. I've been on other people's boats, and it's like, we get one hook really deep, and I'm like, you got jaw spreaders? Like, oh. You know, they bought a pair. They're super inexpensive and worth having one or two laying around.
For sure.
There's one set. I think they have them. They're sold out right now.
You don't have to use them on every fish you're releasing. Don't. That's the thing. But occasionally, when you do.
There's one pair here that I kind of dig, which is the Tyrant Tackle, right? I'm sure we'll go back in stock at some point. But they do not have, if you look at a pair of jaw spreaders, they really don't have a flat surface. They kind of just poke the fish, most of these jaw spreaders, right? And I don't really like to just have the, okay, here it is, he's hooked in the mouth, and now we're just jamming him in the face with two sharp points, right? Again, the flat, not flat, but these have like a little arrow on either end that really have more surface. And I like to use jaw spreaders that have a wider surface or a bigger surface area than just the two little points, because you get those little pointy jaw spreaders in there, and if they turn sideways just a bit, they're ineffective, right? And you're resetting them.
Yeah.
And you just kept fooling with
it. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're right.
Opposed to the Tyrant Tackle ones have these flat, not flat, they're rounded aluminum, but it's like more surface area because they have these little V's, and they're easier to get a fish where you need them to be. Because when you jaw spreader is one of those things, you don't need them until you need them. And it's always some fish that just freaking demolish something, right? You're like, oh, here's a big and it seems to be the case, for at least for me, here's a big fish that ate a small bait like it was nothing. Gulp, gone. And now we got a mess. The other time I see it is with Krakens, with tubes, when they headshot it and they just think it's gone, right? They headshot the thing, and now we've got a treble all the way back at the back of their throat, at the back of their mouth. So have them around, but like I said, jaw spreaders with some surface area to them. You know, that's kind of my personal pick. All of them will work. I'm just always, and all this stuff is kind of like with the baits. I'm just going for like the path of least resistance, especially when it comes to tools. I don't care who made it. I just want it to work, you know, and be the easiest option. Okay, here it is. There's a scale float, etc. I was looking for this, Jay. What is it? Offshore Angler or something? Not Offshore Angler. Who even makes this? Just has a.
What are you looking at?
There's a. It says scale accessory float, and it's just a little 9-inch. Oh, holds up to a pound. Yeah. Who makes those? So if I ever find them, it just says scale accessory.
Oh, they're out east somewhere. It's
what does it say on there?
The name of the company.
Something. Blah blah blah. Anyway, we do have an accessory float. You could use a bobber, but that is perfect. You could actually, you know what, if you have those expensive tools or something, you could probably like just heat shrink it to the handle, like one of the tethers or whatever. Just get creative with it, but that'll keep you from dealing with it. You know, those are kind of the primary things there, you know, that you're gonna need to have, and you should always have, and whether you just started, you've been doing it forever. But, you know, back to more exciting stuff. Not to crawl down the rabbit hole here, the old bump board Areno, right? You got bump boards. You got people that love them, people that hate them, people that go everywhere. I'm not going to talk about that. I'm more of a float ruler kind of guy, Jay. But Wreck and Rack. I have the Wreck and Rack, and if you guys heard the episode where I got hit by a drunk driver the one time, one of the few things that survived was my Wreck and Rack stuff. Josh makes a hell of a bump board. I think that, is that the only one we stock at the shop now, like as far as a full sizer?
True bump board. True, we have folding ones and stuff. Right.
You got a couple options. That thing's dynamite. I keep one in the boat for when we get into serious fish class. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, we really need to know. But, you know, that's the one we have just because it's just, you're going to get what you pay for on that for sure. But
yeah, they're great.
People ask all the time, what's the difference? I'll tell you, it's not, if you want to bump every fish, do it. I don't care. Whatever makes you happy. I'm not here to, you know, shit in your Cheerios. Don't care. But, you know, what I do is I have the bump board and I got the float rule. Got them both, right? If somebody on my boat really wants to know, if they're like, listen, is that a 34 or a 35? Well, let's break up the float rule and find out, right? Not going to go down the rabbit hole, but, you know, we get into, is that a 54 or a 55 bump board, right? Now, is that counterintuitive? I don't know. That's just the way I run my program, right? Okay. Is it, you know, if we really want, inquiring minds got to know, the levers will vary. So it's worth having there, but you know, the question, what as far as measuring tools, heck, I mean, back in the day, Jay, a sticker on the side of the boat sufficed. You know, where's your sticker?
That's about all I use. I know how big it is, you know, and I'm not posting it or anything, so it really doesn't matter. I don't measure them. I just get them back in the water as quick as I can.
No, and I mean, no, and like I said, I have a bump. I have a few of them laying around the garage, but like I said, I keep the Wreck and Rack with me, and if we really got to know,
I don't catch 53 and a halfs either. So, you know, I shouldn't be speaking out of turn. If I was, you know, banging fish like that every month, you know, I'd probably bump one or two just to know exactly, cause that'd be pretty darn cool. But
well, I mean, when you get, like I said, you look at like a buck and neighbor Steve, that fish. Okay. Yeah. Let's find out for real. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I hate the PBs, but that's kind of, like I said, we're talking about What the best of the best are the tools, but like I said, for the sake of just the ease on the fish, I go, okay, does it really matter? If it's your first one, whatever. If it's you think it's your biggest, why not? Whatever floats your boat. I don't care.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, a fish of a lifetime for a customer. It's just like, sure. Yeah, we'll throw them on there quick, you know?
I got better things to worry about. If you want to, like, grab your grandma and bump board her, I don't care. I'm not going to sit here and worry about it. Measure them, don't measure them. Whatever makes you happy, do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if it was, you know, whatever. I'm not the muskie police. Don't care. But if you're going to bump them, I like that freaking board from Josh. Like the Wreck and Rack thing, just because of the stability of it. You know, it's going to lie. The one thing I say is this. I don't think there's a bad bump. I mean, people have got enough people to mention this. I don't think there's a bump board that's, I mean, it's a measuring device. Who makes the best tape measurer? You know, I can go to frickin' the Dollar General and buy a tape measure that should be accurate, or I can go buy a frickin' expensive one and wherever. I'm just looking at longevity, you know, and that the material he's made that of is just, you can't beat it.
It's tough, and there's zero failures on them, so that's important on bump boards. We've had some years ago that
snapped in the
material. Yeah.
You know, all that fun stuff. But that about gets around it. Jay Bird, I was going to parlay back, kind of hit that. We got some Q&A to hit to next week. But back to, I was kind of talking earlier about some of this winter activity. You know, here it is. It's cold, and People that are still out doing it, and you know, guys that have open water, because I wonder a little bit about, you know, some of the Indiana, the Illinois. I've not heard much feedback about how icy it is. Some years you get it, some years you don't, whatever. But you know, there's plenty of people that are still out hitting this to get back to the reality, away from what's the best or what product this or that tactically. You know, saying earlier about trolling, I was saying earlier, you know, about big rubber and things of that nature, right? And I think one thing trolling-wise that if you're really trying to get dialed in right now, you're trying to stay dialed in, right? Most of these places have multiple lines. But one thing that I'm seeing consistently, mm-hmm. is that big is not better this year. Right?
Okay. That's
the reports I'm hearing where, you know, you would go a lot of times, okay, hey, you get into cold water trolling, you get into winter trolling, what's kind of the classic knee-jerk reaction? You know, big grandmas, big jakes, big, right? Where that moderate size class seems to be really doing the trick. And I think a lot of guys, when you go on that quote-unquote hog hunt, you know, in the winter, you're not out there gunning, whether it be late season up north or you're fishing through, heck, late season down here or wherever, you know, you want to kind of try to hit that grand slam. And I think that's one thing for guys that are on the water right now, that moderate size. I can't rage enough about the M9 Pro. We've been talking about that. But
yeah, it's spanky baits, yeah.
Yeah, that thing's phenomenal. But some of the other mid-size crankbaits, you know, for trolling applications here that at least I think that need a look. Something that doesn't get any attention as a trolling bait is the big, big shallow raider, right? And
the 9-inch Booker,
the 9-inch
shallow,
Booker,
okay.
Shallow raider. I don't even think I've ever talked about it trolling on here. But if you look at that bait, it's a thicker bait with that smaller profile, right? So you got a 10-inch headlock. It's a little bit more vertically robust, right? So a wider profile looking at it from the side. And a way more wild action. And again, caveat being here, is it a matter of would they eat a big bait with a more toned down action? That's a possibility, right? I don't have any subtle 13-inch baits. So there's food for thought, right? If I had a very subtle 13-inch bait, maybe it'd be it. So, but I'm getting a heck of a lot more eats on these moderate action baits where it's not the wild meandering the entire time, like in years past has been so good with headlocks, matlocks, and things of that ilk. But that big shallow raider has been interesting because it's kind of like an in-between stopgap for me, right? Where if you think of like toned down action in a trolling bait where, you know, grandma tends to be maybe one of the tighter actions. If we're talking about the wobble of the bait and how it kind of works in the water, Jake's a little bit more aggressive. You know, if we're starting at the bottom of the hill and going to the most aggressive, right? Grandma's going to be down here towards the bottom and the headlocks at the top for most aggressive. I've seemed to see some action on that 9-inch shallow raider as kind of a in between when I make that jump from say Jake's to headlocks, right? In that flat sided kind of minnow bait thing where it's not something I've done in a few years, but every now and again, when I need to pull a trick out of the bag, it's working. It's where you have a more aggressive action, but it's not too aggressive. And that's an interesting bait just to kind of to add in there, because I don't really think of that bait per se as a trolling bait. I don't know. I mean, what's your take on it, Jay? You think most people are casting that, or what's kind of the status quo for people that are grabbing at the shop?
I thought most people were trolling with that personally. Really? Yeah, the wobble on it's great because mm-hmm. it's rocking side to side. I don't know if you've seen yeah. that recently in the water.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I've been running it. Yeah,
yeah, it's different. It's different than most baits of that size class out there, really. I mean, it yeah. is nothing like a grandma or no. a spanky M9 or a,
but it's not,
or a
it's
10
not,
inch slammer.
It's, right. It's not yeah. as aggressive as a headlock.
Right. No, it's not as aggressive and it's not as deep running too. It's a right. very buoyant bait. So when you start incorporating, you know, killing your drive, making, you know, exaggerated turns, it's going to rise up pretty quicker yeah. than a lot of other baits of that size class too. So it's got yeah. its merits for sure.
Yeah. It's just interesting because it's so cyclical, you know, you go, okay, you know, you spend a year trolling headlocks and you go, okay, this isn't working. You start trolling this and you troll that. I think a lot of it when you're dialed in, and this is overarching, it'd be dialed in on casting bucktails. I don't care. The second you feel like you're dialed in, it's time to start playing around to stay dialed in. right? Once you're like, okay, I'm on them. Thinking about, okay, what are other options that might become hot or remain hot when this primary option that's working might fall off the cliff, right? So people typically in musky fishing, they're like, they're dialed in and they're just dialed out. They're just, it's over with. And I think it's hard enough to get dialed in, then start exploring other options. And you'll see that variation because there are gaps in between patterns, and there's gaps where people go, okay, I was really on a good, say, rubber pattern, and I had a lot of failure, and then I got on a really good trolling pattern, right? There's peaks and valleys to alleviate the severity of those peaks and valleys. When you're at the top, start playing around. And that's what I'm trying to constantly do all the time, is where, you know, you say, I haven't had the chance to run the 9-inch slammer, but I've been on some really good bites in the past with a really big slammer, which is a heck of an aggressive, you talk a hyper aggressive trolling bait, right? The big, what is it? 14J? Is it 12? What is the big slammer? The biggest one
he made. They make 14s.
The 14. That thing will wake you up. But
yeah,
and reeling it back to the boat is like landing a fish. But, you know, right. I've been on bites like that where, like, here you're thought, I'm just killing them. And then it ends, you're like, where do I begin? You know, do I need to step it down in size? What do I need to do? So, you know, a lot of times for me, whether it be casting or trolling, it's not that quote unquote magic bait. It's the appropriate action and the appropriate size class. So once I'm dialed in on size class, I start going above and below that and then playing with different actions. And I think that's what's really helping me this winter. Like, okay, really dialed on these M9 Pros. Then you start seeing the preference. Okay, it's 2-1 now. You know, you start out and you're not getting any eats on these other baits. And then you keep playing around and keep playing around and go, okay, 9-inch shallow raider. Okay, now it's 1-1. You know, say on Wednesday, you caught one on the grandma and you caught one on that. And then you go, okay, well, now they're on this. This seems to be getting more action. You know what I'm saying? So either as a means to elevate you from where you think you're dialed in even more, or as a means to stay ahead of the pattern. Because I think it's the best way to look at it. With once you're dialed in, try to stay dialed in by always augmenting or always playing with that, your current game plan, just from that standpoint, which just alleviates you from just completely being out. We go, move off the bite. No, they didn't all stop inning. You've heard it before. The bite was hot and it's over, Jay. No, they're doing something different, you know, or they want something slightly different. So just the school of thought there to try to stay dialed in on that. And then the same, another point that could be made is the same thing with rubber baits this time of year, right? You know, you'll go through that ebb and flow of they want mag dogs, they want mag dogs, and then they don't, right? Well, is it a matter of could you downsize, or could you go to like a toothy tough, and the running depth and the action tends to be different enough? You know what I'm saying? Because does it make sense where what I'm trying to get is you're working in a set of parameters. It's minnow baits, but how do we kind of just follow that? Because I would even say the way I think it's going right now for me is like, okay, the M9's kind of subtle. That's been good. They're tending to show a little bit of a preference to the more aggressive stuff, that stopgap at the Booker, where if I had to guess, here pretty soon it's going to be headlocks again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
And that would be the next, I would say, like linear move for me to stay dialed in, which is like, okay, if I see, say tomorrow, I'm running 2-2. I'm running 2 grandma or 2 M9 Pros and I'm running 2 shallow raiders. Well, if the only baits that get action would be shallow raiders, you see what I'm saying? Like cycling things into that trolling spread and cycling things out. And again, you can do that in casting if you have a boat partner, if you're just diligent about it and you're spending the time. But I think that happens a lot with big rubber as well, where there's so many moves that can be made that are of the same running depth, similar action, but you can make moves bigger, smaller, and slightly augment the profile. I tend to see that as a means to really think ahead and stay dialed in. But, you know me, it's just, it's a freaking autism factory chase. So, never ends. Anyway, I think we got some videos coming out here shortly, Jay. What's on the docket? What's the next one?
Oh,
you got that big 2025er coming up?
Yeah, I haven't finished shooting it yet. Tom's back.
Tom's
tomorrow.
Back.
My main photographer. So I'm going to try to get all that stuff done this week. We put out a video last week, and that's the master class on building your own bucktails. And that's great. If you've ever wondered about details on what kind of parts you should look for and what might work for you and all the design that goes into it. Yeah. It's a long video, but there's a lot of information. It's great for winter projects, so now's the time.
Now, I was able to, the one thing with that, I peeked at it. I don't watch my own videos because I did them. But I believe that that whole video is done with just vice grips, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, vice grips or maybe a Nipex, like a round bit or an AFW
wire, but I'm saying like as far as forming the bucket.
No, the round bend pliers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, whatever.
I can't remember what
you
used.
You don't have to have them. That's one thing. You can go full pro when it comes to bucktails. You can go completely pro. I think there's like the Boggs Tackle Maker, and it'll make beautiful bucktails that you could sell at your flea market booth in the summer, Jay. You could have jars of jam and, you know, they make beautiful stuff. But, man, when it comes to bucktails, a lot of times you can just bush build, redneck them together, and it doesn't matter. Because, like, using just a pair of vice grips to get the job done, like you said, the round bend pliers, but that's not a superb prerequisite, you know. Bend it around a freaking Sharpie. Bend it around a pencil. You'll, you know, whatever. You can manipulate that wire. You don't have to overcomplicate it, I think people find it daunting at first when you're making bucktails. It's like, oh, that's got to be perfect. No, muskies, they don't care. You know, again, size, profile, action's going to trump also. Awesome. Well, we got more videos coming up next week. Going to get more tactical it. I think we've covered most of what do I need. You know, buy a shield rod, buy a Trunks, buy a bunch of baits.
And
buy the
July
right
19th. July 19th,
oh,
Muskie
goodness.
Shop
you
Ash.
You told me that earlier.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about it.
It's coming up.
It is. Make your plans now. So it's officially the 19th.
July 19th, Saturday, like usual. Muskie Shop Ash in Minocqua.
Very good. Well, guys, we will remind you. I'm sure we'll have some stupid, crazy promo for that one coming up.
I hope so.
No, that's always a good time. If you've not been to one, if you're in the area or whatever, that's a fun time because I just kind of dig how cash it is. I can't even, it's so cash, I won't even say casual. It's too casual to even use the full word.
Okay,
it's just
I understand.
Cash. Now, it's cool, we've said it before, but it truly is like really laid back where everybody's kind of fluffing around, eating a hot dog, talking, and there's always cool baits. That's the one thing, if you're into cool baits. There's always something. You can come out and harass Duff or something.
Lots of vendors, lots of specials, lots of fun.
Lots of fun. All right, Jaybird, say good night.
Thanks, guys. Good night.